All right. Well, thank you, Joan and Jimmy, for inviting all of us, and thank all of you for coming out. It's wonderful to be a kind of warm-up act for three extraordinary poets, and who are also, and I can say this personally, are really, really each wonderful people. Well, this may come as something of a surprise to you, but we are in the middle of a political season, and I'm going to read three poems that kind of explore an important but difficult question that we all face both politically and personally, and that is, you know, how much do we want to be connected with each other, and, you know, how open and generous do we want to be as a society and as individuals? And I don't want to oversimplify this. It is a very difficult thing. So the first poem I'm going to read is a new one, and it sort of explores how we come together or connect with each other around food. It's called hecatomb, and hecatomb is a word that's used for a Greek ceremony in which it was a public ceremony where 100 animals would be killed and sacrificed to the gods. This poem is in two stanzas, and the first one is set in historic Greece, and then there's a turn, and the poem turns to here, right now, in the present. Hecatomb. 100 animals, startled when they stop and catching each other's scent. The priests would sprinkle barley meal and pray aloud on their behalf. Perhaps they'd place a cloth over the beast's wide eyes to quiet them. Even so, the screams were terrible. The blood ran into the dark bronze bowls. Thigh bones and fat were given to the gods. Then everyone was fed. The late night deli clerk returns. A waft of cold comes with her from the storage room. She hefts a head of meat onto the slicing tray. She's thin, say 55, and black, pale hairnet underneath her baseball cap. She prints the barcode, slides the plastic sleeve across the countertop. Anything else? Her weary eyes meet mine. They're dark and lit with startling bronze flecks. This second poem is from my newest book, and it kind of focuses on my younger brother who adopted an African-American son as an infant. And the poem asks the question, how much do we want to shelter the people that we really love? How much do we want to risk letting in the broader world? The poem's called Blessing in Baltimore. It's kind of a longish poem, and to make matters worse, it has three epigraphs, so we all know we're getting into some trouble here. So I'm going to give you a kind of preview of the epigraphs. The first is from Dante's Divine Comedy. Dante's guide, the poet Virgil, finds Dante, who's lost in a dark wood, and tells him that he has to take a difficult path to find his way. The second one is from Robert Lowell's wonderful poem For the Union Dead, which looks back on the Civil War, but from the period of the Civil Rights Movement. And then finally, there's an epigraph from Edgar Allan Poe's short story, The Mask of Red Death. And there's a prince who has a big party in the middle of a plague, and he holds it in his walled castle when he has seven fantastically colored rooms, each one a different color. So this poem is called A Blessing in Baltimore. And here are the three epigraphs. You must take another way, Inferno 1. The old South Boston Aquarium stands in a Sahara of snow now for the Union dead. The seventh apartment was closely shrouded in black velvet tapestries, the Mosque of Red Death. So here's the poem. Tomorrow, following the christening of your adopted son, I'll take some time to see the National Aquarium. I'm writing this because a poem is all I have by way of gift. And I find that what I mean to write isn't just about your sudden life as parents of a multiracial son, but about the Baltimore, its place, yet more than place, that you'll be living in. Each time I come, I watch the fish spin round and round the great illuminated multi-story tank, silver and gray-green, like currency in wind. They flicker, each according to its kind. Sea brass, mackerel, and halibut, they speed and spiral, ceaseless, sleepless, oblivious, intent. Outside, the buses idle at the curb. Reboarding visitors recall the banners, glass pavilion shops, and food of festive, redeveloped Baltimore. It's sad, a kind of spiral in, how people come to see this tidy city built for them to see, less like a city than a mall back home, and still believe in it, not find it false or feel a loss. In contrast, your adoption was a movement outward, legal papers and your signature, a costly, wavering blue line, deployed in ordinary ballpoint pen, recorded with the deeds at Houston's courthouse, while you stepped out, an infant at your arms, into that huge and foreign sky, its great piled water stacks of cloud, so open and so high. To visit you, we cross Antietam Creek. Pale companies of leaves plaster the water and drift to the Potomac. Past the battlefields where both sides lost, they dapple the entry porticos of gated towns and sprinkle the swing sets and fall upon a child's sneaker in a private lawn. They flicker like a dream among the mortgage tax deductions and the infrastructure bonds. They gather in the swales along the interstates and by the wheel stops in the shopping center lots. They spiral through the subdivided farmlands that the Army of Northern Virginia could not save. Then, at last, float down to segregated Washington. We drive on through failing twilight into Baltimore. Baltimore, that border town and sometime home to Douglas, Poe, and Key. Even from a distance, we can see the halo over Camden Yards. The Orioles have won again, it seems. And as we drive, the post-game fireworks appear to us like brittle, shattering chrysanthemums. But to the ticket holders in the stands, like overarching and fantastic rooms of blue, then purple, green and orange, white and violet, and then ba-bang, bang, 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 a room of black. I imagine all those human faces looking up. Then the ghostly crowd, the parking lot, black street kids rove among the rows of cars, the doors unlocking and the keys, the silent engines flaring up, then driving home. The smoke, like one of Poe's uneasy dreams, descends upon the darkened and divided town. Tomorrow, at a polished and ornate baptismal font, you'll set aside your son from all the principalities and powers of dark. But there, in the sunny transept, with the flowers, with the stolid congregation dressed to please, where the rector dips his thumb in and makes the watery mark on Gibson's forehead, the powers are gathered in the room. It's not that vestments or the people in their suits and floral prints are bad, yet they can form a narrow circle like the font's dark wood, a circumscription savage, harsh, and dense, and filled with temptations to protect and shield. So, what can I, who haven't come so far or risked as much, possibly say to you, to guide or bless. I give you only my imagined picture of a place. There, women leaned across the fences of the tiny yards to mark a union or to mourn a loss. Their small, unconsecrated plots enclosed some beaten soil, a strip of vegetables, or maybe blue forget-me-nots. A tap runs, and through the humid evening air, you hear the dishes sloshing in a sink next door. On summer afternoons, the neighborhood cascades down low front stoops along the baking row house block. A small patrol of dogs sniffs trash, and children chase each other on the street and walks. Someone with a wrench has turned a hydrant open, and the kids converge. The shirts and shoes fly off. The water froths, anarchic and impure and shared. And all the taxpayers' money overflows the gutters and the broken curbs. Going to close with a poem that's also about an adoption. It's got a religious-sounding title, Annunciations, but it really asks kind of who do we really want to be at our best, and do we have the courage, how do we have the courage to do that in our very ordinary and very messy world? My sister-in-law, Mary, adopted an infant daughter from Russia, and she was a single parent at that time. And when she went to meet the child, my wife and I were on a big 30th anniversary trip to Florence, and I was taking a photograph of a Fra Angelico fresco, Annunciation, and that's the story where, you know, an angel gives Mary the word that she's going to have a new child. And as I was taking the picture, a young girl kind of stepped into the photograph. So in this poem, the young girl and Mary and the angel and my sister-in-law Mary and her new daughter all get mixed up and conflated together. So here's the poem, Annunciations. To me, it's a mystery what happened that moment. There in that broom-swept Russian orphanage, the instant you met your new daughter, the uncertain air and nothing else between you. I was in Florence, climbing the stair at San Marco to where, in my photo, a girl I hadn't intended is entering the frame. She steps into the space of Fra Angelico's most famous fresco. Her knee is bent slightly, like the angels beside her, its wings a stiff tracery of gold and copper, mauve and verdigris. Her hair is dark, like yours, her face a frown. The one arm I can see is covering her chest the way that Mary's are, covering, I guess, a hidden purse. Is she with a student group and trying to keep pace with her talky guide and hissing, wished-for friends? Or just lagging out of sight of distant parents. But what I wonder is, the real question in all these annunciations is, will she say yes to the God within her, that unknown something she might at her best become, just barely a hunch, an intuition, and so ill-formed, what a bastardish thing it looks like now? Will she say yes to so much grief and such unfolding all in one? This day, a day that brings with it a faintly religious feeling, the monastic cells, the crucifixes on the walls, but also the gift shop, the restrooms, the piazza of St. Mark's, its sun too hot. She steps into this place, and brings already in her mind the flight behind, the longer flight to come, the movies, the delays at customs, then the old routine back home. Will she say yes, and harder, keep on saying yes? Can the two embrace? The one stiff-winged, intent, the other so, so young and moon-faced, come from two such different worlds into this silent, deep, pictorial space with its delicate, arched Corinthian columns. The air so still it seems as if it waits, this foreground and this floor so swept, immaculate even of shadows, and the whole scene balanced by that flat little garden to the left, at once edged oddly with a plain plank fence and sprinkled with those mysterious white flowers. Thanks so much.